Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
Ficarro slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. A thunderous dunk. Ed Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The injury bug has struck the Cavs once again as they find themselves on a losing streak and somehow playing once again without a point guard on the active roster. But the Cavs aren't the only ones being hit with injuries right now. The Chase Down Pod is suffering as well, as Carter Rodriguez is out with flu-like symptoms. I'm hoping he gets his voice back tuned. Hang in there, buddy. We're all rooting for you. Everyone wants you to come back. But you know what? It's going to be okay, because today we have a very special guest making his return to the Chase Down Podcast. It's Spencer Davies of BasketballNews.com. Spencer, it is great having you back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. It's a beautiful day outside, like 80 degrees in Cleveland. And we just had the NFL draft, had all sorts of good things going on in the city. So good vibes around here, man. Good vibes around here.
Dude, the city looked beautiful. Like I was getting a little bit of FOMO. I was also just looking at the crowds and just seeing how far ahead you guys are compared to us is bumming me out right now, because we just hit lockdown in Winnipeg once again. We are going on a 4-week lockdown, and I'm feeling it, man. Like, this is quite the time. Normally, I don't have the Cavs in the beginning of May as that seasonal depression really hits. And I still don't really have the Cavs to cheer me up, but at least there's things to talk about with them. And I'm really happy to have you back in the mix to help me break that down. But before we get into the Cavs, I do want to talk. So obviously, BasketballNews.com, I'm thrilled for you, man. You have been killing it all season. You have made the transition from kind of working on that Cavs beat to a more national beat, but also provide a lot of really good Cavs coverage. How has that transition been for you this season?
It's been really tough, especially when you look at just the logistics of everything, that you can't really get, you know, person to person contact and that one-on-one interview vibe with people. Like, I've done plenty of those one-on-one interviews this year. And I think that that's a credit to a lot of the people that have helped set that stuff up for us. But it's still really weird that you don't have that same personal connection that you do when you're obviously in person,
right?
Like, so it's a little different, but it's also kind of been good because you've had to adapt. You've had to, like, it's like forcing you to adapt in a way. And I think that our team as a whole has been crushing it this year. And you mentioned just the website. I think the growth of everything, the exposure that we've been getting, and just the quality of content and work that our team does is just so awesome. And I'm very happy to be a part of this team. And like you said, last time I was on this pod, I didn't have this. So it's for me personally, it's very rewarding to know that those years and years of work that I put in ended up kind of paying off.
Yeah, absolutely. And for all our listeners, if you're not checking out BasketballNews.com, you should be. Especially in today's media landscape, I find so often a lot of the conversation gets away from the game itself. And especially in a season where it's been really tough to get a read on what's going on, but there has been interesting storylines along the way, whether it be great stories like the Phoenix Suns. Even we were talking before the podcast started, for those that don't know, we're recording on Sunday afternoon and we just watched Nets Bucks. And even the transformation that Giannis has made this season, just the versatility he's added to the game and kind of the wrinkles in their approach compared to last season, it's something that isn't really talked about a whole lot. And it's nice that you do have outlets like BasketballNews.com that are providing kind of that nuanced breakdown and analysis that I think really the coverage overall is starving for something like that.
Thanks. Yeah. And I think, again, our team does a great job, and it's the versatility of our team that I think does a really good job, because we have guys like Rex Chapman and Kenyon Martin, Etan Thomas, like former players. And then we also have Troy Brown Jr. That's a part of the staff. He actually did a vlog and he wrote about what it was like to get traded. Like, you can't get that kind of perspective pretty much anywhere else. And then you have someone who's on the rise and just a star in Nekias Duncan, who does these amazing film breakdowns. And it's funny that you brought up the Giannis not getting talked about this year. He actually made a case for why he was leading in the MVP race about a month and a half ago. And it's funny because, you know, just the way that the league is covered these days, everything's star driven, everything's about who's teaming up with who, what's happening next, instead of what's looking at, you know, what's happening now. And we try to kind of take that route of this is player friendly. This is all the positives that we can cover and that we can bring to the spotlight. That's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that the access that we've had has been very superb, especially for a year like this one. And again, it's been very rewarding just to see it grow, because we've only been around since late August, and you know, the following's going up, and the love, and you can just feel the support, and it's really cool.
You mentioned how not having kind of those in-person opportunities to build relationships, to tell stories, obviously that is an expected hurdle going into this pandemic year. But has there been something that through that has kind of emerged for you as an unexpected positive surprise from the season, or maybe something that you've had to adapt, and because of that adaptation, you feel like the coverage is stronger as a result of it?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it's more convenient. Because you can go pretty much hop into any Zoom that you're invited to. So I can go to a Zoom for a random game tonight, like Houston and New York. I could go into that pregame, you know, scrum and still be a part of that and still cover that as if I'm there. And it's kind of just works both ways. It does suck because you don't get that, like, feel that personal connection, like I said earlier. But the benefit is the versatility of coverage you can have, the amount of games you can cover, and the amount of players you can cover, because it's so available. And that's something that you usually have to wait for an All-Star game or the NBA Combine or the NBA Summer League. But this season particularly, you've been able to really cover the entire league without any issue, honestly.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've really enjoyed, because I think it's given opportunities to people that maybe traditionally wouldn't have had that. So there's a lot of positives there. And I got to say, even though you've now gone on the national beat, I'm really happy that we're still getting some Cavs coverage out of you, especially not just when things go bad. You've been providing good coverage throughout the year. And one of the stories I want to talk to before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the Cavs is this potential report. So Anderson Varejao may be joining the Cavs in the near future. Now, Chris Fedor had mentioned that the Cavs reportedly will be seeking a hardship exception there to Adam so that he can retire as a Cavalier. Another kind of a report in there is that Matthew Dellavedova might be done for the season. So once again, the Cavs, assuming Garland comes back at some point in the near future, will be either without a backup point guard or continue to be without a point guard, which is unfortunate. What was your reaction when you saw the potential of Anderson Varejao joining the team?
I didn't know what to make of it, Justin. I saw that pop up on my phone. I'm like, huh. So let's dig into this one, because I haven't heard that name in quite a long time.
Right.
What I was told before, you know, the news came out that Chris reported about the hardship exception was, the news might have been a little bit of ahead of itself.
It seems that
obviously
way.
There was, you know, a lot of maneuvering and tinkering you need to do to make that possible. Mm-hmm. But the hardship exception, you could see that coming through, especially if Delly is done for the year. And depending on the severity of this Garland injury, this ankle injury that he just sustained, then you could see it happening. And it would be cool. It would be cool just to see Andy, back in the wine and gold colors and, potentially end his career where it began. So that'd be pretty cool just from a fan perspective and from a Clevelander perspective. But the news itself, I think we still have to wait and see what they do in order to make it possible.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And actually, one of the benefits, I think, of our partnership with the Cavs is now I'm more measured. Like I'm waiting for reported things to actually happen, because so frequently, because of the reliability of someone like Shams or other newsbreakers, you just assume that the transaction has occurred when they report it. But these things do take time, and as you said, a few days have already passed, and he's not on the roster. But I have a bit of an Anderson Varejao theory for you here, Spencer. And
All right, fire.
All right, so the last time the Cavs did something to honor a beloved big man for the Cavs franchise was when they retired Ilgauskas's number prior to the 2014 NBA draft. That was an NBA draft where the Cavs had a 1.7% chance at the top pick. Looking right now, Cavs are pretty squarely out of the play-in mix and will likely have between a 10 and 14% chance of picking first overall, considerably greater. But do you think that this is a karma play? Honor the big man and history will repeat itself.
Hey, you know, why not give it a try, right? it's if that worked last time.
You know,
but that's an interesting theory. Okay, so you bring back Andy, maybe there's a little bit of that luck with the Wild Thing hair and all the fanhood that comes with it. So maybe we'll see.
Yeah. Are you someone that believes in karma? Because I 100% believe in karma. And like one of my big things down the stretch, which has now materialized, was, you know what? Don't pull Garland, Sexton, Love, all these guys down the stretch. Like let them compete for the play-in spot. The losses were likely going to come organically, which they did. I think we saw that the guys that were coming back from injury weren't as healthy as maybe we would have anticipated, or that the curve to get back up to speed was a little steeper than we expected. But I just wanted that good karma of, you know what, going forward, making every game count, which they still can do, right? Like there still is productive things that can be done even though they're out of that play-in stretch. But I'm someone that believes in those good vibes. Are you someone that believes in that, or are you just a little more in the reality-based realm of society?
How about somewhere in the middle?
Okay.
Is that fair?
Just I'll accept that.
And you make a really good point about just the health of the team, and it just seems like they can never catch a break. Anytime a player is hitting an individual stride, anytime the team is hitting a collective stride, it seems something goes awry. Mm-hmm. And it just sometimes it just comes down to some of these like freak accidents. You just can't avoid them, unfortunately. Yeah. But like you mentioned, I mean, even in that stretch where they were talking about, you know, getting to the play-in game and stuff like that, you had Colin Sexton miss, you know, 4 or 5 games with a concussion. You had, what's with all the concussions, by the way? Yeah. There was that game against the Wizards, the first one, where 4 players, it was Lamar Stevens, it was Isaiah Hartenstein, Colin Sexton, and Larry Nance Jr. all got hurt from that game. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good game, too, that they played. So it just seems like a bit of misfortune, and it sounds like an excuse, but it's really just, again, the reality of the situation is you just watch it play out. It's a lot easier to look at this team and say, oh, they've been unsuccessful the whole year. There are stretches where they look pretty good. Mm-hmm. You're obviously pieces away and whatnot, but they have something growing there. They have a good core with these 22-year-olds, 21-year-olds, you know, it's got potential. You just have to see it through. And I think I read somewhere that those like core players didn't play, like they haven't even played like 100 minutes together yet.
Oh,
like it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you went basically 3/4 of the season with those guys playing like a total of 2 minutes together. It's absurd. And now, once again, as you try to like maybe build some momentum, which like Carter and I talked about on our last podcast together of, hey, you know what the Phoenix Suns did in the bubble where, you know, they gained some chemistry, they gained some momentum. Maybe you have an opportunity to do that. And again, that gets robbed of you as Darius Garland goes down with an ankle injury and leaving the Cavs without a point guard, which in itself is another opportunity, right? Now you have Jetty Osman, who's kind of step up in kind of that point forward role. Colin Sexton's going to be asked to do more passing, which unfortunately has become once again a topic, as The Athletic reported today. It was more of a Kevin Love story than anything else, but in there included a tidbit, Joe Vardon saying that, I guess reportedly some players have vocalized a frustration at times with Colin Sexton still not giving up the ball as much as they would like. What was your reaction as you were reading that reporting by The Athletic?
I'm not a fan of interior dissension at this time of year. This is mm-hmm. a time of year where you should be building towards something. You shouldn't be airing your frustrations. If anything, save that for the off season. Like it's, you've got 7-8 games left of the year. There's no reason to enter the summer with these negative vibes, mm-hmm. Especially for the strides that Colin has made and Darius has made. Like, I think it's just pulling apart instead of sticking together in this type of year and this kind of chemistry you're trying to build and the culture that you're trying to build. It's not conducive to it. So right. like you need to kind of find a way to express your frustrations privately. Honestly, I don't like the publicity of that. And maybe it gets better as soon as you win. We mentioned that earlier, when we were talking about winning solves everything, right? But the two kind of go hand in hand. If you're not healthy, if you don't have experience together, the wins are going to be hard to come by because the NBA, mm-hmm. you have a lot of talented teams, and that's just the reality of the situation. And as we know, not much size at that forward position that the Cavs definitely are going to need to address coming up in this draft and the offseason, however they're going to do it. But I think individually you can look at strides that guys have made and commenting on the negative instead of talking about the potential and the growth that those guys have had in their individual games, I think would be a lot more productive than to publicly air your frustration.
Absolutely. And it's kind of, once again, kind of reflection of modern media right now, because that was a paragraph within a story on a totally different topic. But then once it gets aggregated, it's okay, now there's an entire article dedicated to this, which, again, it's frustrating. You certainly don't want that stuff to come out publicly, because there is merit to it. Like, there is definitely examples that you can point to in each game where Sexton can do a better job getting teammates involved. I think that you can also acknowledge, hey, there hasn't always been consistent options, opportunities to develop chemistry, the type of things that really promote ball movement. And Sexton has been a efficient scorer that has also increased his assist totals. But within that, when you're going through a losing streak, as you air your grievances, like, the little things that your teammates do that bother you become amplified. It becomes a little more frustrating. And this could have been a situation where you're listing things that everyone's got to work on, frustrations that you've had, and that one gets picked out and makes it into the report, right? Like, there is a very long list that I could make about every single player on the roster. But I do think that it is interesting, because you can acknowledge the growth that Sexton has made. Like, I actually would argue right now that he's probably doing a better job of kicking out to three-point shooters than Darius Garland is. Garland, he likes to probe on the inside, create those opportunities close to the basket, and sometimes misses those guys on the exterior. While Sexton is looking for those drive and kick opportunities, because he now understands, as I blow by my first man, which I'm capable of doing on a very consistent basis, if that help comes, I have to know where the open guy is, right? But especially with Garland out of the lineup now, I do think that there's an opportunity to continue to work on Sexton's playmaking skills, because at this point, it's the play-in is no longer a realistic goal. And maybe developing some of that skill set and giving him game film to study, where he either makes or doesn't make the correct read, could be a productive way to use these final games.
It could. And the thing with Colin, and you bring up a really good point about the spray outs, because, I mean, when you're drawing two, that means somebody's going to be open. And he's even gotten better at the lobs, too, if you look. So it's not just the spray outs. He's gotten better at lobs. Just the ones over to Jared Allen earlier in the season, the ones to DeVale. So that area of his game has grown. And that's even tougher to defend too, if you look at it, because you don't know whether he's going to pull up, do the floater, or do the lob. Like, so you have all those options. And the same goes for Darius too, because when Darius is doing his herky jerky stuff, which is a little bit different pace that Colin plays with, it's the same kind of deal where guys are kind of picking their poison. Mm-hmm. So again, those two developed like so much in the past few months. But Colin, particularly with me, is his off-ball game that has been really good. Just moving without the ball, willingness to shoot the threes. And the thing too, that really kind of bothers me, the way that Colin is covered, or is talked about, I should say, is that, you know, there's a selfishness or something. For me, you have to score. You have to score. And this isn't a very good offensive team. Mm-hmm. It is when it clicks and you have the full roster. But someone's got to score. I mean, yes, the efficiency matters, but when you're down someone like Darius Garland, who's giving you 16, 17 a night, more like that 20 a night, since post All-Star break, then you have to have somebody who takes on that number one role. And if, you know, teammates aren't taking shots, or if they're turning them down when they get them the looks, then what else can you do?
Right.
The opportunity to hone in on his playmaking skills this last stretch, I would agree with that. I also wouldn't count on it long term in that manner, because he's more of a secondary playmaker and somebody who kind of puts pressure on the defense and then like you said, find guys on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Darius is going to be more of that maestro type. And you mentioned Jetty too. How about a random 11 assists against Miami?
It is very
he came
ironic.
Back out again. He's an interesting player. He is very interesting.
It's kind of ironic that this came out right after Sexton had a 25-8 game, right?
He had like 10 the other day too, as well. Before
right,
that.
Right, and it's funny because I think. And shout out to our buddy and friend of the podcast, Jason Maples, but he basically said, stop microwaving these players. Like, they're not finished products at 22. And I think, like, even from a way that we analyze and discuss this story, yeah, there might be grievances within the locker room. That doesn't mean the teammates have necessarily given up on Sexton or that somebody has to go. And, like, that's always the conclusion that people will jump to. But, like, the frustration airing out where teammates need to go, need to be better, that's part of a healthy culture. You just don't want that going external, right? Like, that's when all of a sudden it's okay, this is no longer a positive that these critiques are being discussed, because it's now being litigated through the media, which you never want to be the case. But like, even looking at raw assist numbers, like I think it, and this is something that I pointed out before, where I wanted Sexton to get up to four, which he's now done this season, which I think is an accomplishment that's worth celebrating, because guards like Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, they're all kind of around that four assists. But you also you can go off of just the raw numbers in situations like this, because Mitchell, as an example, which I think is a player that he should strive to be like, when Mike Conley's on the floor, he has a 21% assist rate. When Mike Conley is off the floor, that goes up to 30.2, which is kind of almost at that like Garland-like levels. Whereas right now, Sexton, it's 18 when Garland's on and 24 when Garland's off. Now, Mitchell didn't come into the league being this kind of a passer. It's something that he's worked on as well. But I think even playing off ball for Sexton, he needs to understand how to use his athleticism to create opportunities for other guys in situations other than driving kick. Because as you mentioned, right now, yeah, there isn't a lot of other options to provide reliable, efficient scoring. But in the future, they're going to be adding another lottery pick, another top 10 pick. Isaac Okoro is going to become more comfortable and be able to contribute more offensively. Darius Garland, we see, is making big strides offensively. That's why the off-ball growth that you noted with Sexton is important. And he's got to continue to find ways to maximize other players and be part of the collective. Not saying that he's a selfish player or anything like that. That is just realistic goals and next steps, in my opinion, when you're talking about his development.
Yeah, and it should be. You mentioned, you know, the off-ball stuff. Something that I find interesting is sometimes that, you know, if you're on the cut and if you're that much of a threat, you have other, you know, defenses trying to stay pinned and attached to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of in itself creates a little bit more space for people on the other side of the floor. So maybe he gets to that level. I mean, he's been consistently a, you know, 37-38% 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be, you know, that catch and shoot guy all the time. But if he brings that level to his game and continues to be consistent in that area, I think that he could make noise in that way as well. Just kind of dragging defenders with him as he's cutting and staying in perpetual motion. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe that's the next step for him. But again, I just think the overall growth, knowing when to pull up for the mid-ranger and recognizing when the defender's dropping or if he's coming up on him, blowing by guys, the lobs, the spray outs. I think that it's all there, and he's just going to put it all together 1 year. And if it's not showing through the numbers that he has this year, because the numbers are very good, then it's going to show at some point or another, or it's going to, you know, it's going to hit people.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, the nice thing with it is, you know, he's working on it, right? Like, we've seen consistent growth in the playmaking department from him. It's almost like the three-point shooting for the Cavs. As they get healthy, all of a sudden that three-point attempt rate goes up. They know what they're supposed to be doing, just sometimes they revert to old habits. It's the same thing with Sexton, right? Like, you see the attempt to add that playmaking. You've seen him work on those driving kicks. You see him, as you've identified, figuring out when those lob opportunities are there and when to feed guys on the inside. Sometimes it results in turnovers, but when it comes to Garland and Sexton, I'm fine with turnovers at this point, because I would rather them get turnovers attempting to do the right things than playing safe basketball to maintain a good assist to turnover ratio. Like, at this point, advanced stats be damned. Like, go out there and try to sharpen your skill set and to figure out what those limits are. And then when you figure out those limits, you have to decide, okay, is this a decision-making thing? Is this something that I can improve and make part of my game through physical transformation? Like, this is all stuff that's really instructive, especially as you go into an offseason. So I think when a story like this comes out, you can take it at face value and go, okay, doom and gloom. Once again, like, there's some friction in the locker room. Like, everything has to be fine on a team that's losing and missing the playoffs when playoffs were the goal. That's going to happen, right? And the flip side might be to go too defensive, where it's, oh, well, who else can score? There's no one to pass to you, blah, blah, blah. I think ultimately either side, taking either side, isn't productive. Understanding and acknowledging the opportunity for Sexton to continue to improve and just go with the correct opinion. Like, you don't have to go to one extreme to bring people over to your side, because I think we've all been online long enough to know that that's never going to happen. Just, you know what? Be better. Be better than it, right? Like,
And I'll just, like, say, too, like, I think the reason that it also kind of hurts is just that Collins just kind of been a punching bag ever since he entered the league. So when things like this come out and it's just consistently talking about how he doesn't want to pass or he was a selfish player, it's I feel like it's unfair, and he has not gotten covered the same way as if, you know, some of the other younger players make mistakes. And I truly feel that way. And I think it's just kind of unfair, the way that he is portrayed, because kid works his ass off. He really does. Mm-hmm. And he's probably, I would take him over anybody in that draft class, as far as work ethic goes, as far as wanting to be great, wanting to do the right thing. And he's still learning. Like you said, he's 22 years old. The core four of this team is all still on rookie scale contracts. I mean, And if the expectation inside of that locker room is higher, that's good from that perspective. But when you look at the outside and how little time that these guys have spent together, then it's a different kind of feel. And knowing that group needs to gel still, it's not going to happen in the season, folks. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's safe to say. And I definitely get where you're coming from when it comes to the coverage of Sexton. Like, he was somebody that, like, even I had to overcome, like, this is the return for Kyrie, right? Like, in his rookie season, and he was such a raw player. I didn't like the pick at the time, but he's someone that's won me over with his work ethic. I think most people would call me a Sexton believer at this point, as I wear my Sexland shirt. I'm really encouraged by his consistent growth, and the nice thing is that when these situations have come up in the past, it's been channeled into, all right, I'm just going to keep getting better. I'm going to win people over. My work ethic's going to do it. But at some point, like, you just hope that it changes, right?
And to be particularly clear too, like, that doesn't mean he's beyond reproach. He has these situations where he goes into double teams and gets blocked at the rim. Like, those things you have to eliminate. You have to eliminate, you know, silly turnovers and you know, those things, obviously, you have to be critical and be fair. So he's not like beyond reproach by any means, but I just think that the positives have definitely outweighed the negatives when it comes to Sexton's growth. And the same goes for Darius Garland. He does the same thing too. He tries to split triple teams in some situations, and they're still learning, you know, their reads. And when they get doubled and when defenses throw different looks at them, because now they're kind of the target on the board. Mm-hmm. Teams know those guys now. They don't make any, you know, thing about it. Like, that is real.
Yeah.
So adjusting to that and adjusting to the different coverages and double teams and schemes and all that stuff, that's another area of growth that probably still won't come for another 2 years or three.
Yep. Yeah. And it's not an indictment of them that there's nope. still a learning curve, that they still have to get better. I mean, look at some of the other examples. Like, I think as well, when you're a team like the Cavs, where you're not in the playoffs right now, there's not a lot of reason for people nationally to tune in. A lot of the like early narratives that form for a player stick there. Like, yep. even Steph Curry would be an example of got the rep as a bad defender and then became a good positional defender and contributed positively on that end, but he got stuck with that rep. Kyrie Irving as an example, like, selfish player, doesn't play defense. We saw him step up defensively for the Cavs in the playoffs. He was a better passer than Sexton was and still got that never passes reputation. Ultimately, what it comes down to is winning solves everything. Like, it's a really boring answer, but you can try to establish as good of a culture as you want. You can do all the right things. You can have the vets in place. But if a team's losing, cracks are going to show. Grievances are going to be aired. Obviously, we don't want that to occur publicly, but you got to go out there and like earn it. Like, this team has to be better before you can expect the coverage to reflect the nuances in your game. Like, you're not incentivized to say, hey, when you're in a losing streak and you're, let's say it's a veteran player, I'm not making any accusations of who it was. Like, it's the report said multiple people, but let's say as an example, because early in his career, the veterans complained that he didn't make reads. If you're a veteran player and yeah, Sexton's maybe improved by 25%, he's going from 3 assists to 4. You don't acknowledge those nuances when he misses you when you're open on the 3-point line, right? Like, it's just frustration. So I think being fair and acknowledging the improvements he's made is probably the best way to go about it. Because at the end of the day, this isn't something that's worth pulling your hair out over. But moving on and actually circling back to what we were talking about earlier with Jetty, he looks way more comfortable when he's starting and when he's got the ball in his hands. The point Jetty experience has actually worked recently. Like, we've seen multiple examples of him playing better. I want you to weigh in on what you think is the biggest contributing factor here. Do you think it's just, hey, I have a set amount of minutes, so I'm not going to press as much? Is it the fact that he has the ball in his hands a little more frequently? Or do you think it's the time away that he had to kind of gain composure and get back to the basics?
I think just all three of those, man. Because I was just stunned at how bad he shot the ball and played as a result just those last couple months. Like, it was just unlike anything we've ever seen. Maybe it was an exhaustion, you know, maybe it was the lack of a consistent role, whatever it may be. It always seems like he always gets put in these positions where he doesn't want to play the four and stuff like that. Like, there's so many different ways they've tried to use him, and sometimes it's by necessity. But with the ball in his hands, when he is that playmaker, I always thought he would be the perfect playmaker off the bench for the Cavs in like a 20 something minute role. Right.
Yeah.
But he's back to playing over 30 minutes a game now. So he's come in and he's done a really nice job, especially over the last 5 games. I know the results have been all the losses, but, if you're looking for positives, yes, just the way that he's very heady, just with those bounce passes, and attacking the rim too, I think, is another area where he's improved. And he wasn't finishing too in those times where he was missing all those threes.
Yeah.
He was also, you know, missing point blankers during that time too. So
sometimes over three people.
Yeah. It was just kind of inexplicable, man. I honestly don't know how to answer the question. But it appears that he's found it before. We know he's not as bad as what he showed in that stretch. Everybody slumps, but
That was one hell of a slump, though. Like that. That's why. I do have to wonder if the transition from going to, hey, you're the starter, you're getting 32 minutes a night, this is your consistent role, kind of helped him play team basketball. But similar to Sexton, how he has to understand that at some point there's going to be more talent on the roster and you need to redistribute your energy in different ways. The same thing is being asked to Jetty Osmond, because I think you mentioned his ideal role is being that playmaking wing off the bench. And you look at it, in theory, having Jetty being a playmaking wing, Larry being a good passer at the power forward position, Hardenstein being a good passer at the center position, like you would think that those lineups have potential alongside Colin Sexton, and seeing them do well together and play make for themselves and others is a great sign, because if as long as Jetty's on the team, that's ideally a pairing that you can capitalize on, that you can make the most of those opportunities. And maybe that's something that that chemistry can move forward to next season if Jetty's back. There's a lot of opportunity there. And I do hope that now that he's kind of settled down and he's had a couple of good games under his belt, that he can make the adjustment to doing the same things in fewer minutes, because that's what it's going to really come down to. Because whether it's with the Cavs or somewhere else in the league, that's his role. Like, he is not a starter. He's not going to be getting starting minutes in almost any situation. Like, you got to make this adjustment if you want to continue being a contributing role player in the league.
Right, right. And consistency is the key, man, with him. And he's such a rhythm player. I remember asking him that earlier in the season. I'm like, what gets you into the flow of a game? And he looked at it. He's like, you know, I don't really know. Like, I just kind of play with the flow, you know, like, and if vibes. Someone isn't, I know, right? Like, there's no really other way to answer it. Just especially just the way he plays. He can just tell when Jetty's going to have a good game. There's just an energy about him. You know, if he sees the ball go through the net the first couple possessions, then, you know, you're probably going to get a good game out of him. Mm-hmm. If you see a corner shot and he bricks a couple, probably not going to get good Jetty. So it may be just a confidence thing. You know, maybe also Taurean Prince and Dylan Windler being a part of that wing rotation. Sometimes Demian Dotson playing three at points. Maybe that kind of, you know, was a little funky for him too. Who knows? But it'd be good for him mentally just to finish the season strong. And he started to do that.
I mean, the ever-changing rotation has been funky from an analysis standpoint. Like, on a night-to-night basis, this is the most difficult season I've ever had to read. Like, you've talked about how there's been, like, maybe 6-7 seasons within this season where you go on these losing streaks, you go on winning streaks. Like, it has just been really unbalanced. And I described it earlier today as like the ultimate Rorschach test season, because you can look at, hey, these young players are excelling, they're showing growth, they have chemistry together. And you can also look at, well, the win total isn't great, the offense for the year isn't great. Yes, they've had great stretches. Yes, they've had good months offensively, but the end result isn't good. How difficult has it been for you trying to analyze this season? And do you have any kind of larger takeaways? Like, is there something that surprised you with the Cavs this season, positively or negatively, that you can take away from the total result?
Well, before I get to that, the evaluating a season like this, especially just with this team, and knowing they have 27 different starting lineups.
Oh my goodness.
27. Yes, I have it right here.
No, it's sorry to cut you off, but no, it's the most ridiculous part of that.
What's that?
It's not 27 different starting lineups because they're trying to find a combination that works. Like, the starters are established. It's Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Love, and Allen. And yet you just have so much damn turnover. Sorry to cut you off, but
it's unbelievable, isn't it? And that's what also... And you don't expect, you know, national coverage to know that stuff. But like, when you look at the Cavs and you see their record and you just kind of assume things, like, they haven't been healthy all year. And when they were still doing okay. I guess the thing that the negative takeaway I have is the lack of a consistent rotation. But again, by necessity, it's kind of like that, because you can't help people coming in and out, right? I think their most successful stretch of the season was right before the All-Star break and out and coming out of it, where they were 4-1 Dean Wade was in the starting lineup with Garland, Okoro, and Allen and Sexton. Like, you know, once they have like a team that plays, we'll set the bar really low. We'll set the bar really low, Justin. 10 games in a row. Mm-hmm. 10 games in a row, the same starting lineup, the same bench rotation, what have you. Then let's see, right? None of their starting lineups have played over 7 games.
Yeah.
How do you evaluate that team? Tell me. Like, you can do individual stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, again, we mentioned Garland's growth, Sexton's growth, Okoro playing the most minutes out of any rookie in the league, even though the offensive, you know, side of it hasn't been great. It's been a little better lately, but you know, those are the things you can take away. You can't take a collective sample size from this, because it's just impossible when you don't have those guys out there together.
Yeah.
And it sounds simple and it sounds cliche, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the God's honest truth.
I mean, we had Kevin O'Connor on the podcast, and he said the same thing, that even for the good teams, like, there's nothing you can really take away from these regular season results. And it's funny, because what we like to do on this podcast is lay out the entire situation. Like, when we were talking about the Kevin Love mishap there, we outlined every factor that goes into it. We will give our opinion as well, but we like to give a balanced view, because then people can make their own decisions from there. I try to do the same thing with this season, because you can look at the difference between playing at home and playing on the road. Well, those road struggles that are really a big deal for the Cavs and have caused those road games to be so much worse, that's also true of other teams, maybe to a lesser extent, but that could contribute to the home success. Like, there's so many different things and so many different ways to read into every single situation that, like, I'm just trying to find a balanced view. Like, I'm always going to be optimistic in my read moving forward, but I at least try to be objective analyzing the situation. And so many times this season, I just find myself saying, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to make of it. Like, it's just a very, very, very difficult season. And you
they
know
can't
what?
Get a rhythm. They can't get a rhythm. And that's going to really just put you in the basement. That's just what it does. You want to talk about positives? How about finding guys like Lamar Stevens? You know, a guy like Dean Wade, who I think poured in 18 points last night. Yeah. You know, those are those little gems.
Even finding Hardenstein, like,
exactly.
On the trade market, I think was that's a great move. You had two second round picks and got him. Like, that's a big deal.
It is. So you know, little positives like that. Sexton and Garland, we already talked about that. We talked about Okoro's defense. Jared Allen just being smarter than every other center that he plays against.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, those are the things. Those are the things that I think you could take away. There is no giant generalization or conclusion you can have. That's where I'm at. You know what the conclusion you can take from this season is? The teams that have stayed the healthiest are the best.
Yeah.
Look at Utah. Look at Phoenix. I think they have the least amount of starting lineups this year. Like,
yeah,
it's how it is.
Like, Utah just added that recently, because now Mike Conley and Mitchell are missing a little bit of time, right? Like, it's I think that's a correct read, that the teams that have had the most time together are going to be the most successful. And when you're the Cavs and you have this much turnover and you're also fielding one of the youngest teams in the league, inconsistency is, like, that's the only way that this is going to play out. And it was annoying when we said that at the start of the year when they were playing well, that, hey, this is probably going to go on some rough stretches at some point. You don't have to worry about trading guys away because they're going to win too many games, because it's probably going to happen organically. And I think even with that qualifier, I think this team is better than its record. Like,
I think so too.
Looking at all the factors, this team is better than its record. And, like, at the end of the day, like, that works to their benefit. If that's true, and if my read on this is correct, that's a very good thing, because they're likely going to be picking higher than they would if Kevin Love played as many games as he did last year. If they had chemistry, if they had continuity, like, if they were healthier, if Larry didn't miss as much time, they probably would be picking later in the draft. And you look at these last couple of weeks, they don't play a team that's not in the play-ins, like in the playoffs or in the play-in. Like, it is I think it's among the three toughest remaining schedules. They're only playing good teams. They're going to be shorthanded for those games. Frustration is going to bubble up. There's probably going to be another piece or two that's negative. But at the same time, you're about a month and a half away from the draft lottery. The news cycle is going to change. People are going to forget this stretch. It's not going to be fun to close out, but you just look at individual performances and see if there's any growth to be had there, right? Like if guys can figure something out in these games that might be quote unquote lost, depending on who you're talking to.
And as simple as it sounds too, another takeaway that I can have from the season is the young guys got a lot of experience in high stakes moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will bode well for them moving forward as well. Quite a few of these games, you know, 2-3 possession games that they've been in down the stretch. Sometimes they've not executed and turned the ball over and miscommunicated. Others, you know, like the game against Charlotte and the game against, you know, Chicago, you know, those games, they ended up stepping up in the big moment, right?
Yep.
It's going to happen less. It's going to happen fewer times than what you, you know, see from the established stars and the established players that have had years and years and years of experience in this league. But at least they're in those situations. And I don't think they were in that many close games last year.
No. And it's kind of funny because the first half of the year, or I think before the All-Star break, they hadn't lost one of those close games. Like when it got into the clutch, when it got into overtime, they won every single one of those opportunities. And ironically, as Darius Garland became better as a player, taking on more responsibility, he's had moments where he hasn't done the right thing in those situations, where he's turned the ball over. But again, that speaks to what I was talking about before, whereas maybe he wouldn't have tried to do something in those situations in the past. They went to an established guy like a Larry Nance or an Andre Drummond or a different veteran option in those moments. And yeah, you got the positive result. But now Garland, more confident, trying to step up in those situations. Pass or fail, that's great experience. And I think that's a really smart point for you to bring up there, Spencer.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Anyways, I really enjoyed having you on here, man. This has been nice to talk it through, to talk about what's going on.
Is this your therapy session, Justin?
A little bit, you know, like, again, lockdown, not really talking to a whole lot of people.
I got you, brother.
It hasn't been a lot of fun. Obviously, online has not been very fun because anytime there's angst and these situations come up, people don't have the best time online and reactions can become a little extreme. So having you on to provide the perspective has been really, really great. Do you have anything that you've been working on lately that you'd like to plug, let the audience know about?
Oh, man, everything on basketballnews.com, just me and my teammates doing an excellent job. Like I mentioned earlier, we've got, you know, former pros, current pros, amazing writers. Our podcast network is doing great. We just had Stephen Curry on a couple weeks ago with Rex Chapman, and that's exclusive to us. So
that's
that was
damn cool.
amazing get for Rex and a hell of a job that he did there. You know, Alex is doing a great job of, you know, getting these interviews and exclusives, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying my damnedest to doing the same stuff. So that our podcast network, if you want to follow my podcast, it's Keeping It 94 with Brian Fritz. And that's on our website, little podcast tab there to the left. Click on that and you'll see ours and 9 other great podcasts for you to listen to. So
you can also find it wherever you got this podcast, wherever you're listening right now, you can find Keeping It 94 as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah. But yeah, homepage, always looks beautiful. We have an app. If you want to download our app, it's called basketballnews.com. We've got push notifications, all that good stuff. And we're just continuing to grow, man. That's really the best way I can and put it. And we're just getting started.
Well, love to hear, man. I just love seeing good people find success. And you have always been one of the harder workers that I've known in this industry, and you deserve these breaks. So I'm really, really happy for you, man. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. For listeners as well, this selfish jerk didn't plug his own Twitter handle, Spin Davies. Go follow him on Twitter. Go support Basketball News. Thank you guys so much for your support. If you're listening on YouTube right now, like and subscribe. It's the best way to help us show up in the algorithms. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can do so by sending a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.